Everybody fails at some point in their lives, but it's not the failure that matters, it's what you do afterwards. This is the primary lesson that former college basketball star Will Kirkcaldy has been imparting to children across Connecticut in his school speaking tour, Sheer Will. This tour, put on by CCM and Dalio Education, brought a tale of perseverance to public school students, and now he's sharing with us at the Municipal Voice. Join us this week as we hear Will's story and discuss his journey through 15 schools in 1 week. We'd like to thank our premier sponsor, Digital Back Office Palo Alto Networks. Check them out at digitalbackoffice.com or paloaltonetworks.com, as well as our sponsors at Gateway and Housatonic Community Colleges. The Municipal Voice is the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities podcast in collaboration with WNHH LP 103.5 FM. I'm your host, Matt Ford. As always, be sure to give us a like and let us know what you're thinking in the comments. CCM's Municipal Voice podcast continues to present a key forum on important state and local issues. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the consensus views of CCM or member municipal leaders.
Will, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Matt. Good to be here.
Good to have you. So you just did a whole kind of big speaking tour around Connecticut called Sheer Will that CCM was promoting. And as part of that tour, you kind of give a backstory on your childhood, kind of how you came to where you are today. But for our listeners at home, can you kind of give a little bit of that, summarize kind of your story?
Well, it all started with mom moving here to America and with five kids and living in a one-bedroom apartment. Mm-hmm. And you know, life being difficult from the beginning as I slept in the top drawer of the dresser. And then I quickly go into talking about the fourth grade, being bullied, being left back as a result of just simply not going to school, and then coming back the following year and continuously still getting bullied until I find an outlet within basketball, and that's where things turn. And that's how I was introduced to basketball.
That's interesting. So you, among many other kind of experiences and things you've had to deal with in your life, is sort of the first generation experience, you know, having immigrant parents and coming here yourself is part of that. And you came into New York City, right? Into Brooklyn?
Correct. Yes.
So growing up in Brooklyn, getting bullied a little bit. And I guess, you know, when we talk about things that can go on with kids that we might want to watch out for. You know, there's the bullying, but the other side that's, you know, maybe even harder to deal with sometimes is that sometimes the temptations, the bad influences out there. How did you kind of deal with some of those? You know, when we're teenagers, there's people, you know, drinking, smoking, whatever it might be, there's these influences out there that, you know, are appealing in some ways to young people. How do you talk to them about avoiding some of that? How did you avoid some of it?
Well, I'm blunt with it, and I just flat out tell them that I was a failure at first. Trying to maintain basketball, education, and the city life with all the temptations, with all the pitfalls, I failed at it. I got wrapped up into it just like many, if not every, child in that situation, especially with the parent with mine, with five children, single parent, and working four jobs, just flying under the radar, knowing that, you know, I'm pretty much my own person at the time, even though I was at a young age. So I just impart with them that, you know, I was a failure, but at the same time, I had this talent, this skill that I could lean on. And it's one of the things that I try to foster within them to find something early, because temptation and distractions will find you first.
Find that healthy outlet early on. Yes. It'll serve you well throughout life. So, you know, you had a little bit of a rough time getting started in life, some bullying and temptation stuff, but you did, in fact, pursue your passion there with basketball, and it helped you get to college. Can you talk a little bit about kind of that journey and beyond?
Well, the road to college was a bumpy one, Matt. The way that I arrived college is simply failing in New York, finding my way at Oak Hill Academy, eventually leaving Oak Hill Academy, being accused of a crime, wound up at Simon Gratz High School in Philadelphia, and well, Oak Hills in Virginia, and wind up going to Simon Gratz. Then eventually, West Virginia comes around during the allegations, during the court trips to and from Syracuse, and me, you know, sealing the deal with the SAT and the GPA, and eventually winning the national championship. So that helped in the process.
Yeah.
And, yeah. So, and then at the right before I went to college, I was exonerated. So, you know,
that hung around for a while. That wasn't just a quick over and done kind of thing.
No, it was more like, it was more like 7-8 months.
Yeah.
And then it was just the acclimation to, you know, just being in West Virginia. Really great place. I mean, they opened their arms to me, the coaching staff, the faculty, the professors, the president, you know, the athletic
Very director. Different from Brooklyn, though.
Completely different from Brooklyn. Yeah. But surprisingly, there are a lot of inner city students there, a lot from Maryland, the Baltimore area. DC, VA, and certainly Brooklyn.
So certainly you can still find people who you identified with and had some similar experiences in life.
Yes. Yes. But college is where you go to find those unique experiences, those different experiences. And I was able to connect with just the student body at large. And no, you know, no one ever brought up the fact of the allegation. I was never, you know, hit with any kind of ridicule or finger wagging or even any question about the exoneration. So
they just a welcoming place.
Yes, they just saw Will Kirkcaldy for Will Kirkcaldy.
Yeah. Now I know. Then after that, you had some issues with something that certainly caused problems for any athlete. Is you lost a leg.
I did. I did. And that came after my freshman year where I was performing great in the classroom and I was doing well on the basketball court. And it got to a point where just life happens. And I got to a point where I wanted to enter into the NBA draft. And, and that was one of the things I was looking forward to that summer.
Yeah,
I'm not sure exactly where I would have went, but there was speculation and there were people that were inquiring to my coach. So
some very real possibilities.
Yes.
Of that
some
happening.
Very real possibilities. And there was a car accident, April 19th, 1992, Easter weekend. Lawrence Pollard, teammate at Boys and Girls High School, teammate at Riverside Church AAU program, and then eventually at West Virginia University.
A long time friend.
And more, he was my best friend. And we just went back to Brooklyn, and I spoke to my mom. We had a really good weekend, and on the way coming back, car accident, you know, 85 miles per hour into a mountain, and it just altered and just changed the trajectory of my life. And, you know, I had to deal with that.
Yeah. You've had to deal with that. You had to deal with all the other stuff. There's a lot of stuff there. And this is part of the reason why you're on this beat, is to talk about how there's all these things, and yet somehow you found a way to kind of push through and persevere. How did you come to the point where you are today where you thought, I should share this? How did that thought process go that there was something to do with this to help people?
The culmination of people... just me sporadically talking. Matter of fact, I started speaking about 17, 20 years ago. I started speaking and giving speeches and motivational speeches. And I started my very first speech was at the Spike Lee basketball camp in New York City. And that's where I learned that my story was a story. But at the time, I didn't think it was a story for the masses.
Yeah.
And when I started to talk more and more, I started to see the correlation on what the youth go through day in, day out, you know, just the wave of everything. And I just got a really good vibe, really good feedback. People would cry. They would they would be sad. They had an emotional roller coaster listening to me. And they always felt that I gave them something. And it wasn't until it was punctuated with Mr. DeLong and with the opportunity that I said, this should go full throttle. And I'm not just talking about just talking, but I'm talking about, you know, movies or books, you know.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of been a long time coming. You've been slowly kind of coming to this, but it's time to go full in on this.
Yes, got to grab by the reins, grab by the horns, and strike yeah. Now, you know, the coal is hot, the iron is hot, and just go, just not be afraid. That's one of the
things. If you're feeling the calling, it's the time to do it.
You gotta feel it.
Part of this is you're looking to use your experiences and what you've gone through to help out and mentor others. Have there been people along the way through education and friends, people who were mentors to you that helped you out?
Yes, that's where success has always been for me. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate enough to have an AAU coach by the name of Alex Evans, and he took to me, and he was my coach at Riverside Church, and he and I took to each other instantly, just like so many other players in the program took, but he allowed me to be in this home. So I had this kinship to him with his mom and his dad, and he absolutely looked out for me throughout the entire ordeal, because as I said, the road to college was laced with many pitfalls, and one of those pitfalls is me dropping out of high school in the 10th grade because I failed gym. I just the city life captured my attention, and so Alex Evans was there for me from the time I started high school in the 8th grade all the way through to West Virginia. And what he did, I can never thank him for. And you asked about, you know, telling my story.
Yeah.
I think this is in part me giving back. It's nowhere near what Alex did for me, but in my way, I'm going to find a way to give it back to the youth and be there for them as Alex did. So he was a mentor to me. There was Dean Bernie Baglin at St. John's University was there for me. You had Garrett Ford, you had Shelley Poe, and you had people at West Virginia that just hunkered down with me. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Oak Hill, because Oak Hill Academy taught me what study hall was about. And they fostered education. It was strictly education. The first 2 months at Oak Hill I did in summer school, it was all books. There was nothing basketball. I mean, I trained, I conditioned, but there was no competitive nature. There was no tournaments. There was no 5-on-5, no 3-on-3. It was strictly books. And then when I went to Simon Gratz, Coach Ellaby hired a tutor by the name of Rob Plummer, and he worked tireless with the basketball program, and he made sure that we learned how to take the SAT. Like there's a skill to taking that exam and that test, and he was right there. So I've had many mentors, more mentors for academics than I had for athletics, in fact.
Yeah. And it's really, it sounds like it's very important, you know, to have those people in your life who at a certain point when you could have chosen to go one way, you choose to go the other.
Well, that's the thing. Putting those blinders on, learning what discipline was, and I won't say this for every parent or for every child, but I was one of those children growing up in Brooklyn where I didn't have a man's hand on my shoulder, on my head. I didn't have that. So I had to navigate and figure out things on my own. And as I said in the beginning, it was a failure. It was bad. So had I had that, I think that it would have been better. But my mom did a fantastic job, along with so many other people that I was fortunate to have a relationship with.
Yeah. She did that job, but she had 5 kids that she had to work and support, and having those other people around that could, you know, be a positive influence are invaluable to a parent. I can only imagine.
Absolutely. And the time, and I hate to say like this, because I remember when I was growing up, I would say, man, you guys just don't understand. You old heads don't understand. But I'm going to say exactly what they would say. You know, back in my day, you know, we had community people there that if you were cut up on the block, they would notify your parent, you know, or your parents. And on the block, on that, I grew up on Pacific Street between New York and Nostrand, and it was where you were held accountable.
Yeah.
But off of the block, when you're navigating life on your own, they're not there. So I quickly fell to the wayside. And, you know, I was, like I said, I was fortunate to have those guys in the academic sphere of my life.
You are listening to the Municipal Voice on WNHH 103.5 FM.
When you're going out and speaking to students, if you were to kind of boil down your message to them, what is your message to them? How do you talk to them about how to carry on through some of this stuff?
My message is simply become a student of life. There are a lot of times we look at people and we say, no, that can't happen to me. I talk about sometimes I really try to hammer this home depending on the audience, but I talk about, having a sense of that invitation isn't for me, because we look at things and not being a student of life and just seeing life as a positive or always glorified level is that you don't learn the mistakes that other people have made.
Yeah.
They don't want to look at those things. And what I simply try to say is those invitations to do the things that has nothing to do with your destiny or your goals, your dreams, they don't participate in them because they're not a part of your destiny. It's not a part of what you are made for, and we're all made for something. We are all given a talent, skill, or ability. And my message is simply look to keep your blinders on. And then when success comes, you have the party, and then you celebrate.
But focus it on goals, and everything else is just distraction in some way.
Pretty much.
And just figuring out what those goals are. Yeah.
And start early.
Yeah. I think we would all be very lucky if we figured out what we wanted to do when we were younger and stuck with it. I think it's a good recipe for success.
And one of the things, man, I tell a lot of kids is, listen, you don't even have to know exactly what you want to do. Mm. That's not what I foster. What I foster is you starting to do the things that you may like to do. Yeah. Just that you may like to do. I'm not even saying like, don't go all the way in. You don't have to go all the way in. You can start something, but when you start something, you start in the goodness. You're not starting, with the distractions, because you're honing in, you're trying to get better. And that's what I did with basketball. Like, I didn't know I had a talent being the tallest kid in my school, or being the tallest person in my middle school, in the fourth grade. Yeah. So when I played basketball, I was terrible at it. When I first played, I was terrible. So I didn't think that I was an NBA player then. I had no idea about the game of basketball. And I just tried it. Yeah. And luckily, 2-3 years afterwards, that's when basketball clicked for me, in the seventh and eighth grade.
It wasn't an instant thing. You didn't pick it up the first time and shoot it right in or anything. Yeah.
No. Fourth, fifth, sixth grade, I was not good.
Yeah. I think that's important for kids to know is to try things and to put energy in them. Even if they don't end up sticking with that thing, simply the work ethic and the being in the habit of trying things and really putting your energy into them will serve them well no matter what, if they stick with basketball. Absolutely. Or anything, or if they move on to other
things.
So you just did this whole big tour last week. You had some groups of kids that were like 30. You had up to like 700. Do you have a preference? Well, like, what was that like? The big group versus the small group. Was that intimidating?
Well, I'll tell you this first and foremost. It was an amazing tour. Yeah. I've never been a part of something so grand ever. And now I've put together speaking opportunities for myself, but I've never been on this level. So yeah. The Dalio Group and CCM, you know, I salute them. I thank you guys because without that relationship, I'm not here. I'm not on this format with you right now, Matt. So it was an amazing time, and it was an experience that will never be forgotten ever. So I just wanted to start off with that because it was amazing. The love, the how it's received from the staff, from the students, from the principals, from the superintendents, even meeting mayors. I was received with open arms again, and they were genuinely interested, and it was just spectacular. It was great. So, with that, the speaking in front of the 700 students, that was something that was first of all, it was thrown in my lap at the very last second, and I was like, I said to myself, man. Does it matter? Is it one or is it 100 or 300? Because throughout the week, I was averaging around 350, 400 at every event. And so when they said 700, I just got amped up. Yeah. So I was really into it with that. But my real nitty gritty came when I went to a group. We had roughly about, I want to say 17 to 22 students, like right at a coffee table, right at a boardroom table. Mm-hmm. And just to have them right there to feel the shift. And you could feel the shift in their chairs. You can see them. You can see how every word that I said was an impact on them. And that was something that I was very surprised to see. You know, when you're in the auditorium or a gymnasium with 700, you can see faces, but there's so many faces. So in that small group, I saw that everything that I went through, they had a shift. They had an eyebrow or a hand over the mouth or a, oh my gosh, looking to their, to, you know, to them, their classmate to their left or the right of them. Yeah. And I love that, knowing that it's hidden.
So the big crowd's impressive and maybe even intimidating, but the smaller group really allows the opportunity to really connect more and with.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. That's really cool. And it's also, I think, really cool that, you know, in some ways you're following some of your own advice and that this was something that was new and maybe a little bit scary for you, but you put yourself out there to try something new and learn something new, and it's turning into something really, really amazing.
Absolutely. There was a time, there was one event, after school event, and it was my first time speaking to fourth and fifth and sixth graders. Mm. It was the first time that parents were going to be in the audience. Mm. And I was absolutely nervous because the message is so strong that every day that we were on that tour, there was a tweaking of a verbiage or what we want to expound on or what we want to curtail and just cutting it the right way. And
what works for fourth graders versus what works for high school kids
Matt, that was a challenge. And I visibly was nervous. And Joe, when he introduced me, he let it be known. And in fact, it turned out to be one of the best.
So you went around and you met with high school students, fourth graders, parents in some cases. Did you, in your travels around Connecticut, did people share their stories? What did you learn from the people at all these events?
You know, kids ask some very good questions, and that's during the Q&A is when I realized that the impact that kids are facing. Like they'll ask me questions like, are you considered a mama's boy? And I said, wow, you know, sometimes I am, but it's a badge of honor. And I would find out that that student was, in fact, just in love with his mom, had a great, just loved his mom, rather, had a great relationship with her. And he wanted to know because everyone is calling him a mama's boy. Yeah. And I simply told him that it's okay. You have your mother. You could be a mama's boy, but you are also working on your own life to be independent. Yeah. So one day you'll be independent, but there's nothing right now. There's nothing wrong with being a mama's boy. I said, I think I'm still a mama's boy. And so that was one of the Q&As I remember. Yeah. But I also remember one, I forget the location, and we were talking about mental health. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that the young girl told the entire audience was that she was being abused at home and mentally. And it just took my breath away. It just stole my heart. And I just wanted to reach out and just embrace her, because for her, I believe the number at that time was 250 students. Mm-hmm. And I believe she was in the sixth grade, mm-hmm. the fifth or the sixth grade. And she shared that with everyone in the audience.
I think, it's incredibly brave. Yeah.
It's incredibly brave. And for me, she pretty much said, you're here sharing everything with us. I feel like I can do that. So just her opening up and sharing alone, I feel like I was of good influence just for her.
That's a huge step, yeah.
And then it took it a little further, and she was like, one of my hopes is that you continue to talk about mental health because no one is talking about it. And so to learn that and to hear it is something is so remarkable. Yeah. And I have started to put that into my speaking because I went through mental anguish. I went through mental, challenges. Yeah. And I don't know what carried me, but there's an old saying that, when you look back behind you and you only see one set of footprints, mm-hmm. it's because God was carrying you.
Yeah.
And I, that's what I can attribute it to, because I didn't have any wherewithal to deal with it.
Yeah.
I just had no wherewithal, and I was able to make it through. I learned a lot from the audience.
Yeah. And so, you started to incorporate some of that. Are you kind of, after this week of kind of doing your talks out around different, age groups and whatever, do you go back and sort of think about and change your speech based on some of the stuff you learned this week? Like, are you taking some of that feedback and thinking about how can I talk more about the mental health aspects or, other things like that?
Absolutely. It's a challenge for me because it's my story. Yeah. And a part of that story is to dive a little deeper into it. Dive a little deeper without just simply saying I moved on and life continued, but it gave me an opportunity to say I can add this layer to my information. I can add this layer to my story because I did go through it. So when you say change it, I do change it, but it's in addition, but not by subtraction.
And the parts that really resonate with someone, you think, oh, if that's something that can amplify, maybe others would too. It's, I should kind of expand a little bit more on that part of it.
So that's what I'm in the process of doing. And it's a good process. Like I said, every morning we would confer and we would talk, and before we get to the event, we would talk about how it went last night, even though we did it the night before, because every night there was a wrap-up meeting. And the morning before, if you thought about anything new,
always talk about the game afterwards and how it went.
Yes, always. And there were times we said, hey, add this, take out that, sprinkle some more of this in there, take that out. And the recipe, it actually worked. All the adjustments, it worked.
So it's a continuous learning process, really.
Absolutely. And that's what I tell students is every day you're going to learn. And if you're not learning something every day, then you're doing an injustice to or disservice to yourself because everyone else is learning. People yeah. that want to be like you, your dreams, your hopes, it's a positive thing. It's a yeah. positive network. And you want to be the most versed in that network. So if you're not learning about, you know, your craft or your skill,
yeah.
then you're doing yourself a disservice.
I know you've been to Connecticut before, but certainly not, I think, with this sort of intensity and this on the ground sort of going around visiting everything. What was your impression of Connecticut? Was there anything that you did last week that was fun, that surprised you, that you learned about our little state here?
Well, I learned that looks are deceiving, you know, and the fact that when you say that you're going to go speak to a school that may be below the poverty line, mm-hmm. and then you get to their school and it looks like, you know, it looks like the MoMA, you know, it looks like the Guggenheim, you know, and it's shaped and the architectural look of it and how expansive it is and wide and going on a campus that's 47, 48 acres big,
yeah.
you know, Aces of Chase, and just realizing that this is a college campus. Yeah. Like, I've never seen a middle school. It was a middle school. It wasn't yeah. a high school. And I came back to Jersey, and I was like, you know, some universities need to go to Aces because yeah. you can learn something on how to decorate your campus, because the campus was exquisite, to say the yeah. least, like amphitheater, you know, full court basketball courts, and yeah. you have the pond with the water shooting up, and
yeah.
it just looks like a stroll in on a college campus. And so I learned that there's so much positivity. There's so many people in Connecticut building and fostering yeah. you know, these good educational experiences. I was blown away by that.
Yeah. Yeah. We have some of these really great facilities and experiences, but they are there to help out kids who really do have a lot of challenges that they're,
yes.
you know, despite Connecticut's longtime reputation as being, you know, one of the most highest earning states and whatever, we do also have people who are really, really struggling in this state too. And it's a dichotomy, I guess, in a lot of ways to see that, you know, there's these good facilities, but there are a lot of people who really do need the help out there.
Right. Yeah. And you would never know. You would never know that was a school that benefited those types of students. Like
yeah.
when you look at those students, they're not run down. They're not, yeah. you know, looking drab. They're bright. They're upbeat. Bright smiles, good skin, just good conversation, and they just love a good word. Like, they treated me like I was the dream team wrapped in yeah. all into one player, one person, and it was so warming. It was really nice.
Will, thank you so much for speaking with us today. It's been a real pleasure, and hopefully we'll be talking to you again soon.
Absolutely, Matt. Thank you so much.
We'd like to thank our guest, Will Kirkcaldy. I'd like to thank our premier sponsors, Digital Back Office, Palo Alto Networks, who you can check out at digitalbackoffice.com and paloaltonetworks.com, as well as our sponsors, Gateway Community College and Housatonic Community College. Learn more at gatewayct.edu and housatonic.edu. The Municipal Voice is a co-production by CCM and WNHH 103.5 FM. Kevin Maloney is our executive producer, Christopher Gilson is our producer, Harry Draws is on the boards, and I'm Matt Ford, your host. Be sure to check out our Facebook page and give us a like, and watch out for our CCM chat series on our YouTube page.